venomous people, the chance of ruin was always preferable to the certainty of dishonor. The minister, whose pacific intentions were seconded only by the voices of a few servile and venal followers, attempted to allay the general ferment by an apology for his own conduct and even for the demands of the Gothic prince. The payment of a subsidy, which had excited the indignation of the Romans, ought not, such was the language of Stilicho, to be considered in the odious light either of a tribute or of a ransom extorted by the menaces of a barbarian enemy. Alaric had faithfully asserted the just pretensions of the Republic to the provinces which were usurped by the Greeks of Constantinople. He modestly required the fair and stipulated recompense of his services. And if he had desisted from the prosecution of his enterprise, he had obeyed in his retreat the peremptory, though private, letters of the emperor himself. These ostensible reasons were supported by the authority of Stilicho and obtained, after a warm debate, the reluctant approbation of the Senate. The tumult of virtue and freedom subsided, and the sum of 4,000 pounds of gold was granted, under the name of a subsidy, to secure the peace of Italy and to conciliate the friendship of the King of the Goths. Lampadius alone, one of the most illustrious members of the assembly, still persisted in his dissent. He exclaimed with a loud voice, "This is not a treaty of peace, but of servitude," and escaped the danger of such bold opposition by immediately retiring to the sanctuary of a Christian church. But the reign of Stilicho drew towards its end, and the proud minister might perceive the symptoms of his approaching disgrace. The generous boldness of Lampadius had been applauded, and the Senate, so patiently resigned to a long servitude, rejected with disdain the offer of invidious and imaginary freedom. The troops, who still assumed the name and prerogatives of the Roman legions, were exasperated by the partial affection of Stilicho for the barbarians. And the people imputed to the mischievous policy of the minister the public misfortunes which were the natural consequence of their own degeneracy. Yet Stilicho might have continued to brave the clamours of the people and even of the soldiers if he could have maintained his dominion over the feeble mind of his pupil. But the respectful attachment of Honorius was converted into fear, suspicion, and hatred.
Honorius arranged a massacre of several of Stilicho's closest supporters. Stilicho himself escaped, but was swiftly captured and beheaded on the instructions of the emperor.
The servile crowd of the palace, who had so long adored the fortune of Stilicho, affected to insult his fall, and the most distant connection with the master general of the West, which had so lately been a title to wealth and honours, was studiously denied and rigorously punished. His family, united by a triple alliance with the family of Theodosius, might envy the condition of the meanest peasant. The flight of his son Eucherius was intercepted, and the death of that innocent youth soon followed the divorce of Thermantia, who filled the palace of her sister Maria, and who, like Maria, had remained a virgin in the imperial bed. The friends of Stilicho, who had escaped the massacre of Pavia, were persecuted by the implacable revenge of Olympius, and the most exquisite cruelty was employed to extort the confession of a treasonable and sacrilegious conspiracy. They died in silence. Their firmness justified the choice, and perhaps absolved the innocence, of their patron. And the despotic power, which could take his life without a trial, and stigmatize his memory without a proof, has no jurisdiction over the impartial suffrage of posterity. The services of Stilicho are great and manifest. His crimes, as they are vaguely stated in the language of flattery and hatred, are obscure at least, and improbable. About 4 months after his death, an edict was published in the name of Honorius to restore the free communication of the two empires, which had been so long interrupted by the public enemy. The minister, whose fame and fortune depended on the prosperity of the state, was accused of betraying Italy to the barbarians, whom he repeatedly vanquished. The foreign auxiliaries who had been attached to the person of Stilicho lamented his death. But the desire of revenge was checked by a natural apprehension for the safety of their wives and children, who were detained as hostages in the strong cities of Italy, where they had likewise deposited their most valuable effects. At the same hour, and as if by a common signal, the cities of Italy were polluted by the same horrid scenes of universal massacre and pillage, which involved in promiscuous destruction.
在线英语听力士，感谢您的收听，请推荐给身边的好友。